Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a discussion on how the press is already acting as the enabler of the next round of hostage taking, where Republicans threaten to turn the United States into a deadbeat nation in order to exercise their extreme ideology and satisfy their billionaire backers. Eric Bolet, a senior fellow at Media Matters and author of Lapdogs, How the Press Rolled Over for Bush, joins us to discuss how the next debt ceiling debacle is already being framed as he said, she said, and politics as usual. Then we'll assess today's speech by the besieged Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad that was a mixture of defiance and delusion, devoid of any mention of a diplomatic possibility to end a war that is destroying Syria and has already claimed 60,000 lives. Henri Bakke, a former member of the State Department's policy planning staff, joins us to discuss the consequences of a collapse of the Assad regime and its regional impact, particularly on Iraq. He has an article at The American Interest, Spinoff, The Syrian Crisis and the Future of Iraq. Then finally, following last Friday's jobs report, we will look into the future of jobs as the American economy becomes more and more about profits without prosperity. William Lozonik, the director of the Center for Industrial Competitiveness, joins us to discuss if, how, and when full employment will return, and his article at the Huffington Post, Robots Don't Destroy Jobs, Rapacious Corporate Executives Do. Joining us now is Eric Bolet, who's a senior fellow at Media Matters for America and a former senior writer for Salon. His books include Lapdogs, How the Press Rolled Over for Bush, and Bloggers on the Bus, How the Internet Changed Politics and the Press. Welcome to Background Briefing, Eric Bolet.
Thanks for having me.
And some time back, Eric, the president in, I think it's about a week ago, on Meet the Press with David Gregory, he sort of said, I hope this time around the press don't treat the debt ceiling crisis as they did the last time, which is, you know, a plague on both their houses. What's your sense of, given that the president has laid down a marker saying he refuses to fall into the trap again and take this insanity seriously, do you think he can get away with that?
I don't think he will, because I don't think the press will adhere to his request. The Republican Party, and particularly the Republicans in the House, have lurched further and further, farther and farther to the right, and now conduct themselves in a way that's unrecognizable to anything that we've seen in modern American politics in terms of the absolute obstructionism, et cetera, and the way they, quote, negotiated with Obama on this. But you certainly would not know that from reading the press. The word radical is virtually never mentioned when talking about the current Republican mindset. The word filibuster has rarely been, you know, in context, rarely mentioned over the last 4 years in terms of trying to describe why nothing gets done in Congress. The press has adopted this sort of working platform that if Republicans oppose it, therefore it's news. And they're being sane, and they're acting in a way that is not unusual. And we, as journalists, we cannot make any sort of judgment calls. We just have to report that, you know, the Republicans are objecting to whatever Obama is suggesting, or, you know, when John Boehner can't even get his own Republican caucus to pass Plan B back in December, then that is just sort of portrayed as sort of a normal sort of bump along the road in these sort of high-stakes negotiations. They absolutely refuse to put in context how the Republicans, again, particularly in the House, are behaving, or put into context this sort of unworkable situation that Obama has given faces when he's trying to negotiate with people who don't act the way politicians or the party out of power has acted for decades, if not centuries, in Washington.
So, but when the press covers a real hostage crisis, they don't, you know, basically say, "Well, we need the point of view of the hostage negotiator as well as the hostage taker."
Right. And, you know, and I'm not suggesting this is, you know, akin to a hostage situation, but the Beltway press is forever concerned, nervous, intimidated by the right-wing claim of liberal media bias. So they go out of their way not to portray the conservative movement or Republicans as being out of the mainstream, acting in a radical manner, or in any way adopting unprecedented tactics, all of which they've been doing for the last 4 years and even for longer than that. Let's talk about, a recent example that wasn't related to the debt crisis, but showed how the press absolutely refuses to call Republicans out, which was their very pointed and aggressive attacks on Susan Rice to become, there was talk that she might be nominated for Secretary of State. Several Republicans noted that they would put a hold on her nomination. Republican Senator from Maine said she would oppose any Secretary of State nomination that Obama would give until he properly explained Benghazi. So this was portrayed in the press of, well, gee, Susan Rice is facing, you know, stiff opposition in the Senate, and Republicans are opposed to Susan Rice. What was completely missing is this has never been done before. There's never been a preemptive attack on a newly elected president's Secretary of State nominee. Newly elected presidents for centuries have been given the right to essentially appoint whoever they want to be Secretary of State. Up until Condoleezza Rice, I believe, got 12 no votes when she was nominated for Secretary of State. That was the most in modern American history. But Susan Rice faced this onslaught of Republican assault even before she was nominated, and the press just treated it, oh, this is normal. You know, these are how these cabinet nominees are always treated. It wasn't. No one had ever been faced the kind of attack she had, but the press absolutely refused to put it in context. When we're dealing with the debt crisis and negotiation, we see the same thing again and again. We've never really seen the party out of power act in the way they're acting, but the press is just pretending this is how it's always done. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fear of being, you know, labeled liberal media bias.
Again, I'm speaking with Eric Bollett, who's a senior fellow at Media Matters for America and a former senior writer for Salon. His books include Lapdogs, How the Press Rolled Over for Bush, and Bloggers on the Bus, How the Internet Changed Politics and the Press. Obviously, we have no consensus in this country about what's true anymore. People do what they call reality shopping. Conservatives get their information from Fox and liberals from MSNBC and Christians from Christian Broadcasting. But we do have a couple of decent newspapers, in particular the New York Times. NPR is supposed to be a fair and balanced in a real sense, but they're so afraid of the Republicans, particularly in the House, who control their purse strings, that they seem to go out of their way. There was a discussion recently amongst the NPR editorial staff about how the first hostage crisis was covered in this binary way that enslaves the American press convention, which is for in the universe of discourse, there are two equal and opposite black and white opinions, and you have to have thesis, synthesis, thesis, antithesis, synthesis. You have to have the pro argument, right, the con argument, and then this kind of meaningless mush. What is your sense of whether NPR is actually adopting a little more realism and are showing some courage in actually calling people out when they're talking absolute nonsense?
Well, that's a good question, and if you're talking specifically with the debt coverage, I probably haven't heard enough of the day-to-day coverage to say. It's encouraged that people are at least talking about it internally. I think, you know, if you're covering this on a daily basis, all the journalists know what we're talking about. I mean, they're all smart, college-educated. They've all been in D.C. They know how this stuff works. And so when they see Republicans acting the way they act, they understand, just like we do, this is crazy. We've never seen anything like this. The gulf then becomes, do you have the nerve to write that? Do you have the nerve to go on the air? Will your editor approve it? What will the backlash be if you simply acknowledge that the Republican Party is acting in a completely radical way? Two people who have documented the radical nature of the Republican Party in the last 4 years have been Thomas Mann and Norman Ornstein, who wrote a book detailing all this, saying Congress isn't broken. There's nothing wrong with, quote, Congress. What's wrong is the Republican Party have adopted this radical, radical nature in terms of the filibusters and absolutely refusing to allow anything to get done. Previously, Thomas Mann and Norman Ornstein were widely quoted in the press, often on television, and Media Matters last year took a look at how few times they're invited on the mainstream press to talk about their book, because you're really not supposed to talk about that. It's not, you know, accepted conversation to talk about how radical the Republican Party has come. Now, to their credit, CNN Today and on Howard Kurtz's reliable sources had Mann and Ornstein on, and they talked about this phenomena, and they talked about a little bit of how the press, you know, has really fallen down in terms of not telling people what's going on in Washington. Why isn't Congress functioning? It's not a problem of, quote, Congress. You know, there's a party that's willing to do things the way they've always done, which is the Democrats. Obama has been willing to compromise. He wanted a $250,000 tax, originally taxes above anyone who made $250,000. He ended up at nearly $500,000. That's called a compromise. This is traditionally how the thing how things work. News organizations ought to be talking about it. They ought to be talking about it internally, and they ought to soon have the guts to just be honest and be factually accurate in terms of talking about the methods the Republican Party has adopted in the House does not represent or does not match anything we have seen in American history in the past. That there shouldn't be anything controversial about that.
Well, Eric Bollett, you mentioned the compromise on the $450,000 for households. Prior to that, of course, the Republicans, particularly the Tea Party caucus, basically humiliated their speaker Boehner, right, by rejecting the one they wanted to protect the millionaires and billionaires and go up to $1 million. By the way, the ground had already been laid by both Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer on the Senate side. Both Democrats had also earlier suggested that they'd be happy with the $1 million threshold. So it's pretty clear that the Republicans are in the bag for the oligarchs, and particularly the Tea Party caucus will go to the mat to protect the interests of millionaires and billionaires. But it also seems pretty pervasive throughout Washington that that's what it's about. I'm not sure that there's much of a constituency left for people who actually care about the average American.
Well, both parties fought over that perception, that mantle, that title. Republican Party, a little less traditionally, would be seen as, you know, the party of big business, or business owners, Chamber of Commerce, and things like that. But you would think the Tea Party populism would, you know, it was supposed to be this populism. You'd think they would have embraced that. They would have embraced a new form of conservative populism that embraced the working class, et cetera. But absolutely nothing like that has transpired. We're seeing more and more about how the Tea Party Freedom Works, for instance, was nothing more than this sort of puppet organization set up to, do the bidding of not just big business, but sort of super big business and things like that. There doesn't seem, if you look at this, if you were looking at this, you know, tax debate from the outside, you would wonder, okay, which party is actually interested in people making $70,000 or $80,000? But I think that is partly because the Republican Party has moved so radically far to the right in terms of their interests, in terms of super big business and things like that. And again, you don't see that reflection in the everyday media coverage in Washington. There's just, it's just he said, she said. And that's okay, but one of the he said she said is like on the edge of a cliff. You know, you would think that part would be included in the description.
Well, Eric Mollett, what about journalism schools? And, you know, I understand that this has been a convention for the longest time, this equal and opposite argument. And the, you know, the reductio absurdum of that is if you, you know, you have a Holocaust survivor on, you have to therefore interview a Holocaust denier. And this has been going on for some time. It was its actual origins are in the fact that newspaper owners basically didn't want to offend any of their readers. So they figured if you have, you know, do a story and just have the Republican version of reality than the Democratic version of reality, that way, you know, you're not going to lose half of your readers.
Yeah, you know, and frankly, it worked for several decades. And because both parties were sort of in the realm of the mainstream, one was on the right, one was on the left. A lot of the action took place in the middle. And I think for a couple decades you could effectively do that. Quote a Democrat, quote a Republican, quote a conservative, quote a liberal, and this is what people are talking about. But and when you've got, you know, the House Republicans, you know, so far over to the radical right, that framework doesn't work anymore. Because if you're quoting a Boehner or a Cantor or an aide that's so far over to the right, and then you're quoting a Hassert or one of his aides, that equation doesn't work anymore. Instead of looking like a simple triangle, you've got one from each side that are both basically the same distance apart from the middle. It doesn't work anymore, and that's what they're struggling with. How do we accurately portray where the conservative movement has gone, particularly under Obama, without being yelled at by conservatives, without being called liberal media, how do we still do our jobs? You know, it takes a certain amount of courage, mm-hmm. and it takes a certain amount of guts. And the right wing, thanks to Fox News and other places, has a very vicious attack machine, and it's no fun to be the target of that, and journalists do not want their names on Fox News as being called out as liberal and biased and unfair and things like that. So unfortunately, the easiest way to sort of keep your head down and pretend, and they are pretending because they know what's really going on. They know we've never really seen anything like this. The easiest thing is just to sort of keep pretending that this is normal when it's the opposite.
And of course, this has led to the Beltway reporting being essentially all about process, and that the reporters they get to talk a lot on cable TV are the ones that show that they have a lot of savvy about inside baseball, but they're incapable of making judgments, or at least they are afraid of making judgments. I thank you so much for joining us, Eric Mollett.
Oh, sure. Anytime. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Eric Mollett, who's a senior fellow at Media Matters for America and a former senior writer for Salon. His books include Lapdogs, How the Press Rolled Over for Bush, and Bloggers on the Bus, How the Internet Changed Politics and the Press. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about Bashar al-Assad's speech to the Syrian people and its strange, surreal defiance and delusion.